If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Friends, welcome to a early morning edition of Kirk Your Enthusiasm. I'm Kirk Henderson. Today I am joined by the Ringer's Rob Mahoney. Hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing great, Kirk. How are you? I mean, it is an early edition. How do you muster the enthusiasm this early? How are we getting it revved up?
No caffeine yet, shockingly. No, I had the panic of forgetting to move the trash out to the curb this morning.
Oh, so
that was my jolt of energy. Rob, you know, I've known Rob guys for 10 years now, which is ridiculous to say out loud. Going back to the early internet days, and he's been on the show twice. And Rob, would you believe you haven't been on since 2021?
Yeah, what's going on?
I don't know. The Mavericks, we talked at the, I went and listened to the show real quick. We talked about that Mavericks season, which ended up being a weird one. It was the Jason Kidd's first one as they headed in the playoffs in 2022 later that year. We didn't talk last year because the Mavericks were unbelievably sad.
quite sad.
Just really quite awful. And today we're talking, and you know, it's funny. You wrote a story on February 6th that I really want to talk about, but I'm really quite delighted, in fact, that we've waited to talk about this, because after you wrote your story, the Mavericks made a trade 3 days later for Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington, which really gets the story. And we're going to talk about it for anybody who hasn't read it. I've also pinned it in the comments, and those who are listening on the audio feed, I will hyperlink it in the show notes so you can click it and read it if you missed it that February. Talked about, you know, team construction and where the Mavericks are trying to go and what Nico Harrison thinks they need to do. And then they turned around and did something.
Yeah.
Which I think my opening question for you was, like, how long were you working on that story before it ran?
It'd been a bit. I've kind of gotten into the habit of spending some time, you know, as you know, my folks still live in the Dallas area, so I'm usually around, you know, over the holidays, kind of extending into January. It was a nice long stretch this year where I got to go to a lot of games, spend a lot of time around the team. So it was a longer reporting process. And it was definitely one of those things where, as you're going to the deadline, I mean, you never know what Dallas might do to shake up its roster in that situation. And honestly, I think for the story's sake, it turned out to be kind of a best case scenario where everything that I talked about in that story, as far as kind of the pilot program that the Mavs were running for what they needed around Luka, especially at that time, Derek Jones and Dante Exum were giving them, and Derek Lively, when he was healthy, was giving them. That's kind of what they went out and got between PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. Like, a lot of that energizing, a lot of that cross-functionality, a lot of that versatility, frankly, I think has been such a lift for them in terms of what this new version of the Mavs is and has turned out to be.
So I'm going to read some of your words to you. So this is in the second half of the story. This is a pretty lengthy You know, we all have like guidelines these days about what people's attention span is, but I still enjoy myself a good long read. And this sat right in there. This is in the second half of the story. You wrote, "Length and athleticism are additive qualities. A little bit helps, but a little bit more can be transformational. Dallas has a better sense of what kind of team it wants to be, but it needs to be more of it. Even rangier, more explosive, more versatile." And that comment sat with me and has continued to sit with me as this team sort of exists now. And so, like, knowing what we do know about this team, they've played out of 30-ish games together since they traded for PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford and revamped their starting lineup. And having watched Luka for 6 years now, in your opinion, what is more important to playing with Luka Doncic? The ability to connect on outside shots or athleticism?
I think it's athleticism, to be honest with you. And I'd say that for a couple of reasons. One, I just think in terms of the offense-defense trade-off, supposing that athleticism can translate to defense in the way that it has for the Mavs right now, like you look at the way they're just smothering inside. And the physicality that's being allowed in the playoffs certainly factors into that. You know, they're being allowed to bump and bruise and hold the Clippers a little bit and swarm guys like Ivica Zubac. All of that is only possible because you are this athletic. All that is only possible because you have those sorts of tools to work with. And so if you're going to make me pick and choose, I'm going to err on the side of athleticism over shooting, just because I think between Luka and Kyrie, they're going to be able to paper over a lot of even the shooting and offensive limitations on a lot of different nights. The other stuff you can't really fake. Like, you either are a dynamic athletic team, you are not. And we've seen versions of the Mavs, especially around Luka, that just did not have that juice, and they sputtered and struggled and turned out, as you said, to be quite sad.
Something brought my attention to the Mavericks Oklahoma City series from several years ago, like the last playoff win, I think, of Dirk's career, where they just went nuts in game one, and then the score ended up being like 89-86. That's what qualified, because the Mavericks, as you and I have watched them, and you grew up in the Dallas area, you watched them for most of your life. Athleticism has never been a hallmark of the team, like, ever. No. They had JaVale McGee for a period, but Rick Carlisle exiled him almost immediately. Sean Marion's probably the most rangy, springy athlete that played a lot of minutes, but
and even then, at that point in his career,
right,
only somewhat true, I would say.
He was a different kind of athlete. It was more like an echo of what he used to be when he was with Phoenix, which is it's just so different watching this kind of team. In the piece, one of the things you wrote about was how up until that point in the season, Dallas really, really needed to hit threes to win games. If they were shooting above a certain percentage, they won. If they shot below the certain percentage, they almost always lost. One of the things that's been kind of crazy to watch after this trade is they no longer do this. The three-pointer is no longer the make or break element for them. And it won them some games down the stretch. I would argue that it won them game two against the Clippers. And I don't entirely know what to make of that, because I still think that in terms of getting places in the NBA, you got to be able to hit three-point shots. I mean, look at what the Clippers have done to hang with the Mavericks in this series.
Yeah, and especially to get off into these crazy early leads in this series. Like, a lot of that is high-variance three-point shooting. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have shooters that can ride those lines, you are going to be behind the eight ball sometimes. But I think the mitigating factor there, what's closing the gap, both in the regular season and, you know, in game four, if not to a win, then certainly to make that game close, being one of the better defensive teams in the league since the trade deadline and having that ability to control matchups, to change your approach, even if, you know, Jason Kidd doesn't always choose to do that in select spots. But having those options gives you something to work with, where even if your team isn't hitting threes, you have pieces you can move around the board. You have guys you can shuffle in and out of the lineup who are all viable for very different reasons. And you have two of the best shot makers in the world. And so, yeah, honestly, if Kyrie Irving is playing, I would say 2 to 2.5, maybe 3/4 of effectively perfect basketball, it doesn't even really matter if the rest of your team is hitting all that many threes. Between that and team defense, like, you can get pretty far. Maybe just don't get down 20 to 30 points in the first place, and things will go pretty well for you, I think.
That seems to be a really big help here in terms of what's going on. There was a stat yesterday
that blew my mind, and I must not have retweeted it, but there was something about how Kyrie Irving's, and I'm skipping ahead on accident, but I just want to say this one thinking about it. In transition in the playoffs, Kyrie Irving's EFG, effective field goal percentage, is 96%.
I mean, look, the walk of threes help. You know, we're gonna juice that effective field goal percentage number with the threes, but
it bears out.
And like, he is one of those guys, as we've seen, who can finish in crowds, who can finish one on two or one on three or in two on three situations. Incredible weapon to have, to say the least, opposite someone who's as deliberate as Luka is to begin with, but also as hurt as Luka is in his current form. And so that yin and yang, I think, has been such a lift for them all season. But I will say that's something Dallas has looked to do basically all year in terms of getting out and running. It's just now they have guys like Kyrie who are better finishers in those situations, honestly.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to circle back to Kyrie in a second, but I wrote down my questions like a noob and I can't deviate from my own script.
Let's get back on course.
I really liked one of the elements that I liked about the article. And again, guys, this is before the Mavericks had Daniel Gafford to supplement Derek Lively. I'm curious. There's a lengthy section about, you know, just how he learned to set screens, because we're gonna forget this eventually, but in summer league Derek Lively could not set a screen.
No.
And this was July and now we're in April, so and a lot of people who are not, like, you're a current big man because you still play basketball.
This is
the
true
ability to set a screen and have a ball handler not screw you is an art. It is hard. And so what about, like, what is this season? And so I say that as to point out just how crazy Lively's development has been. What has this season sort of taught you about Derek Lively? And what do you think is a reasonable expectation for his development over the next, let's just say, 4 years?
I think he's already one of these prospects who the biggest hurdle for him, both, I mean, it applies to setting screens, but really it's more broad. His ability to stay on the floor and stay out of foul trouble is going to be the determining factor for basically the early stages of his career. If he can do that on a consistent basis, I think he already looks like one of the most promising young bigs in the league. The combination of the length and the pressure he applies in protecting the rim, his ability to finish is great. Obviously, you want that in a lob around Luka, but catching in space around the free throw line. And Daniel Gafford has shown a lot of flashes of this too in ways that I think are really impressive. Put the ball on the floor, one and two dribbles into moves or passes. If you want to run through the league and the list of bigs who can actually do that on a consistent basis, it's vanishingly slim. That's just not a big cohort in the NBA right now in terms of guys who can do all those things at once. And in particular, the ball skills, I think, really stand out. So if he's able to do all that and be on the floor on a regular basis for the Mavs, I think that's a huge lift over the next few years of these designs and this contending window and really this experiment of this roster. But he's shown that he has a lot to learn as far as avoiding ticky-tack stuff, handsy fouls, guarding inside and in the post. And it's one thing when the officiating is going the way it has in the playoffs. There's a lot more latitude, as I said, right now. But in the regular season, like, you got to be able to get through 82. You have to be able to stay healthy. You got to be able to avoid foul trouble. Those are the only questions for me. And for that to be where you are as a rookie, it's an incredible place to start.
I really love him out of the short role.
Really good.
There was the massive comeback and then, of course, loss, very similar to that Clippers game, quite honestly, to the Oklahoma City Thunder earlier this year. Lively got to – he just sort of in-game figured out that, oh, I can just go dunk this.
Yes.
I can just go do these things. And your colleague, J. Kyle Mann, talked about with Bill Simmons how he feels that the Mavericks sort of have like a limited range of things that they feel comfortable with him doing. I'm just really looking forward to seeing that growth. It's not like we need, you know, big men with the way they're utilized these days offensively. There's just always going to be a limit. I really am curious if he can hit threes. That was a big selling point for him during the draft. Obviously not a thing you're really worried about right now. But defensively, just his ability to take things in and adapt within the framework of the game is very impressive. You also mentioned something which I didn't write down, but I intended to. I think the way the game has been called since All-Star break on might benefit the Mavericks more than any team in the league. Because let's just be candid. I joke with our friend Matt Moore about this. It borderline feels unethical sometimes watching how the Mavericks foul the shit out of everyone at the rim. There were some Lively plays in game four where he's just mauling people. Oh. And keep in mind, I love it. This is not a criticism. It's it's just very different from what the league has been calling. And I think if the league continues back towards, let's just say, a mid-2000s era whistle, not a 90s whistle, but you know, you and I grew up on basketball during the age of power forward foul, like just men's basketball. Dirk, KG, Duncan, there was lots of heavy body contact. And so if we go back to that in terms of viewers and what the refs are calling, I think this Mavericks team is really actually built more for the long haul than they might have known. Because it's just kind of amazing to watch how they can grind it into like a 3 yards in a cloud of dust thing. So
especially like given their personnel, I don't know that a lot of people would have expected that of them.
Absolutely. You know,
not enough people familiar with Daniel Gafford's game in some ways before he came to Dallas. PJ Washington has been that guy and obviously has turned himself into, you know, a bit of a folk hero just by being an enforcer. Mm-hmm. Things like that matter. Yes, there are a lot of incriminating stills out there of guys holding arms and getting into shots and doing like acts that are very obviously fouls by the regular season definition. But if it's not being called, it's not being called. And honestly, this gets at one of like my biggest problems with game four, and which I know has been dissected to death, but
sure.
In particular, the way Luka got into foul trouble and down the stretch, as you're wringing your hands over, how do you stop James Harden? How do you make the proper adjustment or rotational decision to counter all these things? The biggest counter is Luka doesn't have five fouls to begin with.
No,
because right. He's shown that down the stretches in particular in these games,
the body contact,
and he's playing with physicality and like mm-hmm. him basically having to neuter his own coverage. Mm-hmm. I think is what submarined the end of that game as much as anything, if we're being honest about it.
That's right. Well, the last question I want to ask you about your article, and I think this is fascinating in hindsight, was if you were talking to Kyrie Irving and the Mavericks in mid-January, Kyrie had missed a ton of time.
Yeah.
So many games that I think, for example, your boss sort of makes me yell into my podcast. He's like, well, I guess Kyrie's missed a few games. I'm like, Kyrie missed 25 games and almost all of them in a row. And so, but since he's come back, he's been the definition of an Iron Man. And so one of the things I tell people, and again, you go to the games, you see these guys up close. Kyrie Irving is 6'2". He's about 175 pounds. He is a strong, but lean guy.
Definitely.
And like, because Luka might weigh 75 to 80 pounds more than Kyrie Irving. It's just a completely different build. So to watch Kyrie Irving play with these Giants and take it and deal with it is kind of impressive. And somebody said something, it might have been JJ Redick on the Game 4 broadcast, where he said, he asked the question out loud, is Kyrie Irving in the best shape of his career? And that's just sort of one question for you. And then how do you think Kyrie is playing with the Mavericks relative to the myth of Kyrie Irving?
Yeah. I mean, I think you can kind of take both those questions at once, because to me, the whole Nets experience, in particular, the James Harden era Nets experience, short-lived as it was for Kyrie, mm-hmm. is very formative to the Kyrie we see right now. He was playing off the ball a ton. And not only that, but he was energized off the ball. He was cutting. He was moving. He was constantly facilitating. He was busting his ass in transition. Yep. He was doing like all the things you need to do to play alongside other stars. That's not the guy he was in Cleveland. That's not the guy he was in Boston. And so there are myths, but there's also like well-founded tradition of the player he was before that era. And I would say from the time that he and KD and Harden played together, again, brief as it was, in Brooklyn to now, on the court, I think has been more or less a model citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Like works hard defensively, has his limitations because of, as sure. you said, of his frame, of his size, like he can't do everything, but he works, he tries, he hustles, and all of those things make me do believe that he's in the best shape of his career. I think the level of shot making he's had to put on his shoulders mm-hmm. at other stops, that obviously takes a lot out of you. That demands a lot of energy. But I think it's harder to summon energy in this kind of role.
Yep.
And the fact that he's able to do it all the time and, you know, be basically like the beating heart of a team that's trying to come back from a massive deficit in the playoffs, that's the kind of energy that does not come easily. Nope. And so the fact that he has the endurance that he's had, that he's been able to fight through the injuries that he, you know, sustained earlier this season and had to put up with and gradually work his way back from. And look, there were some shaky moments as he was kind of getting back in the rhythm after those absences. But nope. The player he is now is exactly the player the Mavs need him to be, stylistically, sure. And obviously in terms of his conditioning and just like the performance.
there was like a 5-game stretch while Luka was out, and it's got to be in January, where he played what I think might have been the 5 best games of his regular season career. Just truly outstanding stuff. So I told you I'd only keep you 20 minutes, and we're at 18 minutes. Do you have a few more?
Let's do it. Let's keep it rolling.
Okay, so I'm going to take a short break here. And just, guys, if you could do me a favor and consider liking the stream while you're here. There's not that many people here live because it's a Tuesday work day and most people should be at their jobs. But, and I also did a very terrible job with the SEO on this title for YouTube, but that's neither here nor there. If you're watching the video later, please go ahead and consider subscribing. We're nearly at 3,000 subscribers to the show, which Josh and I are very pleased at after only a year. If you're listening to the audio feed, please consider subscribing and leaving a review. Also, shoot me an email. Let me know. You know, I'm always happy to talk basketball with anybody. All right. I'm going to insert some audio ads here for audio listeners. But then Rob and I are going to get right back to talking.
You know, it's a flattering comparison. I'll take it.
Well, both of you are powerhouses in the post. It's just it's a fact of life. OK, we'll be right back here.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called 6 Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out 6 pop culture themed trophies for 6 basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make 6 Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow 6 Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Okay, now I wanted to talk a little bit Mavs Clippers just for a few minutes. So what were the clip before Luka hurt his knee? Let's talk game 1 and 2 only. What were the Clippers doing to limit him, or was he just playing bad?
I kind of err more on the side of playing bad.
Okay.
And I'm sure there were some, even before the knee, some bumps and bruises that maybe were limiting factors for him. Like, I never want to rule that kind of stuff out at this point of the season. But just in terms of what he was creating one-on-one, to me, did not look like the Luka that I expect. Mm-hmm. And I would say especially, you know, we've seen him destroy that Zubat switch so many times in mm-hmm. previous matchups and in previous series. And he did not look like he was a player who was fully in control of and dominating that sort of like mismatch in the way that he is accustomed to doing. So there were enough situations like that that made me think, oh, this is just going to turn. His shot is going to fall. The three mm-hmm. has been kind of coming and going early in the series. That's eventually going to fall. The mid-range stuff is going to look a little cleaner. He's going to be finding getting a better feel of how to get to what his spots are against this defense. Ultimately, like, I just wasn't super impressed by the Clippers coverage. I think it was fine. I think it was playoff viable. I think they were doing a decent enough job, but nothing to make me think, oh, these guys cracked the code on one of the most unstoppable playmakers in the league.
My next question then, since I'm trying to move quick here, do you have any theories for why there have been precisely 0, and there might be more, but I don't remember any, and Josh Bo looks into this sort of stuff after the game, why there have been no Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving actions? No Luka screen and roll with Kyrie. And like, Kyrie has been a devastating screener just because it's short roll action stuff. Do we have any theories on that?
And they, I mean, it's not even just short roll action stuff, but earlier in the season, they did a lot of kind of flare out action where, you know, Kyrie would get wide open threes, screening for Luka, and then himself going around like another screen.
They've done none of that.
I haven't seen any of it either. You're right. I hadn't clocked it. I'm trying to think about
because their offense is stuck in the fucking mud, and I can't. It's not just playoffs. It's not just good Clipper defense. Like Luka's playing a little bit tentative. Everything's a little bit here, there, and like Jason Kidd drives me a little crazy as a coach sometimes because he doesn't hit the easy button. Yeah. Rick Carlisle would always come out with some easy nonsense. Tyronn Lue has been actually fantastic with some of the ATO stuff, and Kidd has actually been pretty good during the season about ATO stuff. I'm a little shocked at that, and it's something I'm going to look for in games 5 and 6. And so just kind of putting it on your radar, and maybe you'll have something to say next time you're on group chat or when you go on with the big guy in the middle of the night with Bill Simmons.
That's a good flag. I wonder, one thing that's coming to mind as we're talking about it, on the possessions where the Mavs do get into their stuff slower up front, like, here's the thing. When you get a mismatch, say you get a big on Luka, say you get a player who has no business guarding him, coming in with the Kyrie screen as, like, the killing blow, I think is something that can be really effective. But it's the kind of thing where you have to be on it from a timing perspective for that to work. Like, if you're getting into your action with 12 seconds left on the shot clock, you almost don't want to overcomplicate it at that point. Like, you have to get into it early to give yourself the optionality where if this is a switch, if the timing is bungled, if they trap Luka, what are we going to do? Do we have enough time to kind of worm our way out of this thing? I wonder if some of it may be that. And some of these half-court possessions where maybe they're just being a little too deliberate.
Oh, Luka's killing. Like, and I don't love criticizing Luka despite some of the weird things people say about me on the internet. Luka is crushing some of the momentum where he's rolling it back to 2021, 2019, 2018, where he's just surveying the landscape. And it's driving me a little bit crazy because the Mavericks have really thrived when pushing the ball this year. And again, the aforementioned Kyrie Irving, 96% EFG in transition. What are we doing? Luka's not, you know, and Barkley sometimes get, like Charles Barkley at TNT sometimes gets a little overly critical of Luka, but these last two games, the kick aheads have stopped. And I hope the Mavericks run a little bit more with Dallas.
And if you watch Luka, like the picks he's calling for, the two man actions he is calling for are for Derek Lively. Mm-hmm. They're for Maxi Kleber. We can go back over the tape. Maybe this is wrong. I cannot remember a single time in this series he pointed to Kyrie and said, "You're like come set this action. Come get involved in this. Maybe come get the ball. Like if I'm being trapped or something like that." But some of it is just like what he is choosing to dial up ad hoc in those situations. So that's part of it too.
Next question. Should the Mavericks consider bending their current defensive game plan because of the Clippers' three-point shooting? The two wins, they've shot north of 50%. And the shots, they went 6 for 6 on tightly contested threes last game. I don't know what to do about this. And I really want to be mad at Jason Kidd, but I don't know if I can.
Considering that a lot of those shots are, I think, by my eye, pretty well contested. What is even the bend? Like, what more do you want them just like hard chasing everyone off the line? Because I guess that's the alternative. In terms of stopping short and closing, I feel like they're doing that pretty well. In terms of the flyby contest on Harden without fouling, I think they're getting better and better at that over the course of the series. Yeah. So unless you're inviting guys to come in for what are effectively like 4-on-3 opportunities inside, I don't know that there's like a great solution beyond do your best. And Paul George and James Harden and Norm Powell, these guys are great three-point shooters. They're going to hit a lot of shots. And right now it's a little over their head. Like James Harden hitting 50% of his threes on like 9 attempts a game for the series. That's a lot, but it's not the kind of a lot that you can necessarily just scheme out all the time.
That's right. Okay. I figured that was the case, but I just had to ask somebody. One more very specific question to the series, then we can get you some closing thoughts on the series. Beyond the lack of shot making, why has Dante Exum died in this series?
I think part of the answer is the defensive assignments have been a little confounding for me with him.
Oh, like, for all the Mavericks. Some of them have been weird.
Some of them have been weird, and some of it is like throwing stuff at the wall. It's, you know, we're going to have PJ Washington guard Harden one game. He goes off. We're going to have him guard him another game, and it works. Yep. There's some inconsistency between just like the results and the shot making that I think are making these things very complicated. But Like, I would love to see Exum on Harden more personally. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing where when I see him on the floor, oftentimes it's guarding other wings. It's guarding other players. I would love to see him just in a position to navigate screens and be on the ball.
He's so good at that.
That's kind of where his strength is to me. Like there, and another player who would hugely benefit from the Mavs getting out on the break more and just getting into the flow a little bit more, which has been, like, if we're going to give the Clippers credit defensively, they have taken away a lot of the flow offense for the Mavs. It has been very stilted, isolated stuff, and switching will do that. Great individual defense will do that. All due credit to them for that. But it does marginalize players like Dante Exum, who, as a connector, just has, like, a little less to do.
I'm pretty sure you're a 30 Rock guy. I have referred to Dante Exum as the Mavericks' third heat. He is part of their Tribeccan oven, and really what makes a lot of, because it was some of his off ball, because I think as a primary initiator, he's a little overmatched. But secondarily,
from like when he has to bust out his ISO game,
not good.
I love Dante Exum, but that's not it.
Secondary stuff where he's cutting, where he's, it's just really breathtaking to watch when he's good. All right, I've almost kept you for half hour and I didn't want to do that. Do you have any closing thoughts on Mavs Clippers?
I'm fascinated. It's a great series. It's like exactly where I thought we would be in macro, but nowhere I thought we would be in micro, right? Yeah. This competitive, but it took one of almost the biggest collapses and biggest comebacks in NBA playoff history to get there. So like Luka just being like a little bit neutralized seems strong, but like not as effective as I thought he would be. And just like creating consistent offense, given how well he played during the regular season. Mm-hmm. There's just so many elements of this series that are a little different than I thought. And that's fun. Like that's the kind of thing that we love to dissect.
It is. Okay, guys, you should check out Rob Mahoney over at The Ringer. He's got a new story out this morning, The Field Guide to Modern NBA Point Guards. I'll post it in the comments, but it was a really fun read this morning that I stumbled upon when I was trying to prepare for this. You can also check him out on Group Chat, which has quickly become, it's like that in Hoop Collective for me, as far as like groups of three people that really like each other, but also kind of love yelling at one another. it's a great... I mean, that's the trivection oven of podcasts, where you there just got go. People that really got get into each other. It's a great listen after every show, or after you guys do it, what, Wednesdays and Sundays a lot of times?
Wednesdays and Sundays, yeah. And yeah. Apparently the third heat is yelling in this case.
That's right. It's mainly yelling at Justin Verrier, who you guys are attempting to make him watch basketball again. And it just sometimes he needs a little TLC to not hate the Nuggets. And to not, you know, and to enjoy basketball a little bit more. He's been fun this year. Rob, thank you so much for taking time out of your Tuesday to talk with me.
Hey, anytime, Kirk. I love doing it. Thanks.
All right, guys. Well, we will be back Wednesday night, probably like midnight after the horrible late game for Mavericks Clippers in Game 5. So that'll be fun. I'll be looking for that stream to post and then come hang out with us after the game. Everybody enjoy the rest of your week until the Mavs game, and go Mavs.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.